Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
KYW Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One.
And I remember getting booed off the field in Philadelphia. I look back on this, I remember thinking at the time, like, this is awesome. This is Philly. I'm one of these fans. Like, I would be doing the same thing. It was so loud in the stands. The boos were so loud. And I just remember going back up to the car, being like, what are the chances that I give up my first major league home run in Philly, and I get thrown out of my first game of my life in Philadelphia?
And our guest this week, a former star baseball player at Father Judge High School at Thomas Jefferson University, went on to pitch in the major leagues with the Toronto Blue Jays, Bob Vile. Bob, thanks so much for taking the time.
Sure, Matt, anytime.
So let's kind of start. What are you doing these days with baseball in the rearview mirror?
Well, I mean, you know, these days I'm back in my computer engineering, using my computer science degree. I'm working in the pharmaceutical life science space, working in clinical trials, and just kind of doing a lot of different things in that space, just kind of utilizing my nerd skills these days rather than my athletic skills.
Was this always the direction you saw yourself going after baseball?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the key decisions before I went to then Philadelphia College of Textiles and Science, now Jefferson University, was the fact that I was going in as a computer science major, and all through high school I studied computer programming quite thoroughly, so I knew it was the wave of the future, and my academics were always first, came first before I went to school. I was mostly on an academic scholarship to Philadelphia Textile at the time rather than athletic, and things changed a little bit once I got to school and athletics became in the forefront. But I graduated in 4 years, and that was always a key thing for me and my family. My mother especially was keen on academics, and so ultimately I was like pure science nerd first and an athlete second.
What's your earliest baseball memory? When do you first remember the sport coming into your life?
Earliest memory, probably, I mean, looking back, probably around 4 or 5 years old. I know growing up in Mayfair, small part of Philadelphia, family didn't have much money, and my aunt Helen brought me a baseball glove because we couldn't afford anything. My aunt bought me a baseball glove and said, "You're going to play baseball." And my dad was like, "Yeah, you are." And right around 4 or 5, started playing at the local athletic club, Mayfair AC Athletic Club, down in Tarsdale and Cobden Avenue. A little park there still exists today. And that's where all the memories started.
When do you start to realize you're pretty good?
You know, it's tough. It's like, it's one of those things where, especially growing up in the northeast part of the country where baseball is, I would say, maybe at that time, it's pretty up there in terms of sports and popularity, but at the same time, football and basketball have always ruled the Northeast, and baseball in terms of, you know, evaluation in town, evaluators and kind of like learning like there is today. It was a lot different. I mean, we played for everybody's mom and dad, coached the teams, and you kind of learn from their experience of watching the Phillies on TV. And I mean, I was always a good athlete, had a good arm, played shortstop, pitched a little bit in Little League, and kind of just, you know, came up the ranks through Little League, local Little League. And I mean, I was always a good player, made all-star teams and things like that. But never in my wildest dreams would I think of going even to college on any type of baseball scholarship.
When does that first, though, start to become something you start to think is possible? Are you well on your way in high school?
Yeah. I think ultimately my sophomore year of high school, I started playing some varsity games. And then junior year, I kind of was a late bloomer, came into my own probably a little late in junior year, having been like a second female Catholic my junior year, wasn't getting a lot of looks. Division I schools kind of do their recruiting for high school juniors. So I wasn't getting too many looks then. And then my senior year is when really had a breakout season at shortstop, won the Catholic League MVP, and then some schools were looking at me. Some D1 schools locally late were looking, like Temple. And I was interested in LaSalle at the time. But Philadelphia College of Textiles and Science and Don Flynn, who was been around baseball forever, he had come to me, a small Division II school, and offered me some scholarship money. And I'd already applied there, as well as a couple other local schools. And, you know, it turned out that, okay, I can get some academic money and also athletic money. So, and they had a good computer science program, good engineering department, and it was a good fit. So, and I figured, and one thing I still say today is I had a chance to play every day. If I would have went to Temple or LaSalle or Villanova or any of these local schools, I don't know, being such a late bloomer, I don't know if I would have, I wouldn't have been on scholarship at those schools. I don't know if I would have played from my freshman and sophomore year. So at Philly Textile, I had a chance to play every single day, all 4 years. And that turned out to be a blessing in disguise.
And you focused, at least early on your career, on being an infielder, correct? Third baseman?
Yeah. Philly Textile, it's funny. I went into Philly Textile. I was a shortstop in high school, and Don Flynn envisioned me as a middle infielder. But Jesse Bouncer at the time was a shortstop, pretty well-known Philadelphia AD at Chestnut Hill Academy right now. And he tried me at second base for a little bit. I've actually played second for the first part of my freshman year. And that was kind of, you know, I had a really strong arm, and the freshman playing third base was more of a middle infielder, especially at second base, than I was. So we kind of switched midway through the season. I played third, he played second, and then the rest is history. I played third the rest of the time at Philly U.
You have incredible success with the Rams. I mean, the numbers are just eye popping. Are you thinking there's a chance to get drafted as your years go on?
I mean, for me, everything, I mean, I'm pretty humble in the regard that I always thought I could get better and better and better. I never thought I was good enough, which is it turns out to be a good thing in a lot of ways. But I think it's tough because, like, of course, like my dad, of course, he thought I was getting drafted every year. But for me, it wasn't until maybe my junior year where I started to get some looks from scouts. But knowing it's a Division II school in the Northeast, but our conference was really strong for Division II. I mean, now it's the Northeast 10 where most of those schools went to. They've since changed conferences. But I think for me, you know, you have the hope, but you're only as good as, you know, the players around you, players in the league. And yeah, I stood out amongst my team and in the league. But I knew in the back of my mind that there's still, I mean, how many Division I schools out there with great athletes? And then there's Division II schools down south. I mean, there's so many great players across the country. The chances of getting, you know, picked up in the major league draft are so, so slim. And I knew that at the time. So I really just continue to keep my head down, work hard, and hope for the best as a third baseman. But I knew that my chances are really slim.
What was it like, though, when you first – scouts first say hi to you, or you can tell people are there watching you specifically? I mean, even if you think it's remote, that's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we would go down to Florida every spring. We go to Florida. We play some really top-notch Division II teams down there, and of course, there's scouts down there because the Southern League down there with the likes of like Rollins College and Florida Southern and Florida Tech. I mean, these guys, I mean, they would probably compete highly against most of the Division I schools across the country. But, I got some looks down there, especially after my junior year, and you had some of the scouting bureau come talk to you after games, and Coach Flynn, Don Flynn, was very, pretty much well connected in those circles, just because he played professionally for a lot of years. So he would introduce me to different people, and it was pretty cool. I mean, but at the time you're just a college kid. You don't know any better. And you think, wow, they're looking at me. I must be, you know, I'm going to get picked up. I'm going to get drafted. And, that's not always the case. I mean, knowing full circle what I know now, it's pretty amazing that I did get picked up out of a Division II school, but at the same time, we'll talk about it, I wasn't as a third baseman. So, ultimately I think, you know, having success, it drove confidence. It gave me momentum to do better and better and work harder because I knew that there was a possible opportunity there. So it kind of drives drives me to do, you know, work that much harder. But at the same time, I was pretty realistic about the chances.
And you mentioned one of the interesting parts of your story, and you talk about it after your junior year, you start to really get attention. And then your senior year is one for the ages. I don't care where you're playing. I don't care who you're playing against. I think you hit 542. I'm pretty sure that led the world that year, right? Like there was in college baseball, that was the best. 90 hits, 63 runs, 68 runs batted in, 19 homers, 167 total bases. And this is, what are we talking, 45 games, 50?
43 games, I believe it was.
43 games.
43.
I mean, those numbers are obscene. And you also, was your senior year when you started to pitch a little bit as well?
Yeah, well, junior year, we had a couple guys go down with injuries. And in Division II school, I always try to explain to people how it happened. The fact that I never pitched in high school and I get to college and I don't pitch my first 2 years. And then my junior year, we had a couple guys get down with injury. And at Division II school in the Northeast, you're not going to have a lot of arms. So you have a lot of two-way players. And some of our best arms went down. So I volunteered as a junior with a good arm that, you know, I can pitch some inner squad. I can pitch some weekday games if needed. So Coach Flynn, being a pitcher in his professional career, saw some things too. And he said, okay, I'll bring you in to close some games out, like when we need an arm late, like one or two innings to, you know, finish some games during the week, especially these 9-inning games during the week where we're short on arms. So I pitched some games that year, my junior year, and got a couple saves, you know, did pretty well. Basically had no clue what I was doing, just worked, just kind of threw hard and had some movement, had a pretty decent slider. And then my senior year, Coach Flynn had asked me if I wanted this. We needed another arm on the weekend games. We needed a third pitcher. So he said, would you mind starting, you know, 6-7 games this year on the weekends? Because we need a good arm. I think you can keep us in the games and keep us competitive. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. And that's kind of how I started pitching my senior year and how everything started to fall. The dominoes really started to fall.
Was there a moment when, because your offensive numbers are just so eye-popping, so I'm assuming there has to be a watershed moment where the right person sees you throwing in the right game that shifts it in that direction. Am I correct?
Yeah, right. I mean, there was a couple of things that made the stars align here, because being a textile, you know, we don't have, you know, hundreds of scouts coming to games all the time. We had a couple of things going for us. We had a left-handed pitcher, Sean Balboa, who played about 13 years professionally. He was our ace. So he pitched the first game of a doubleheader that Saturday. I would pitch the second game of the doubleheader because it was 7 innings. So scouts were there to see him. Scouts were there to see me because my numbers started to really pop and I was hitting so well that they were just curious, all right, who is this guy? And we're going to continue to watch him. So they would watch, and then I was pitching that second game. So some scouts would just, you know, take it all in. Just they're there. They might as well pull a gun out on me and try to see, you know, what's he throwing? And ultimately, after one of my games I pitched all 7 innings. I think I threw like 140 pitches or something crazy. And there was two scouts there, Ben McClure from the Blue Jays and a scout from the Cardinals. I forget his name, but they had both said that my last pitch, my 140th pitch, was 94 miles an hour. And Ben McClure was like, I think we might look at you more as a pitcher than a third baseman. And I was just like, oh, hey, you know, being a college senior, whatever it takes to, you know, get an opportunity. I was all about it. And they continued to come, and more scouts continued to come watch me pitch the rest of that year, as well as play the field and hit. And so ultimately that's where the pitching angle came from all this. It was really the Blue Jays and Cardinals kind of noticing it. And then the other teams coming on board and starting to interview me after games, trying to get, you know, signability and all that, and try to talk about, you know, are you interested in this, and this? What do you know about this? They kind of start to pick your brain a little bit, see what kind of competitor you are, and see if, you know, take a flyer on this Division II guy, maybe, possibly in the draft.
And I know, like you said, you're a college senior, you're willing to do anything. Is there a part of you that's kind of like, as all these guys are talking to you about pitching, that's like, you know, I'm leading the country and I'm hitting over 500, right?
Yeah, it's at the time, yes, for sure. And Ben McClure came after the draft. I wound up getting drafted in the 19th round that June. Ben McClure came to my house and talked to us. And he did say, you know, I was marked down as a third baseman in the draft. And he did say that, you know, I might get out to rookie ball and might pitch. Is that okay? And I'm like, of course. You know, I just said, okay. But part of me is like, all right, I'll see how it goes. And you know, not knowing anything at the time, they'll just let me hit too. I had no idea. So, but little did I know, I would go like 3,000 miles away from home and be sitting in the bullpen, never picking up a bat for another 7 years.
So you mentioned in the 19th round. What was draft day like? I mean, this is 1998. It's not the mm-hmm. cable TV, you know, showcase that we're used to, well, prior to the pandemic. But so mm-hmm. what did you pay attention? Were you just kind of hoping the phone rang? Do you remember that day vividly?
Of course. Yeah, I was at my parents' house. I mean, sitting on the couch, mom and dad, and we're just sitting there. And obviously, there. I mean, this is prior to cell phones, too. I mean, even though it's only 1998, we're sitting there waiting for the landline to ring. And the draft used to be 25 rounds day one, 25 rounds day two. So I'm thinking, I'm just not, if I'm going to get a call at all, I mean, me, my pessimistic self, this is like, it's not going to be till the second day, at least. And my dad's like, oh, you get a call first round today. I'm like, get out of here. So ultimately, we did get a call that day from Ben McClure, the area scout, and he gave the news that it was the 19th round as a third baseman slash pitcher, and that he would come out to sign the contract next week. And looks like I'd be going out to Medicine Hat, Alberta to start my professional career.
Before we talk about the baseball, and you mentioned 3,000 miles away, as a, what, 22-year-old kid?
21.
I mean, yep. mm-hmm. Medicine Hat, Alberta, not quite Northeast Philadelphia. Was there culture shock? What was it like?
Yeah, it was a first. I always say I wish I played in Medicine Hat after a couple of years of professional baseball, because it was a great city, great people, really cool place to go to, a really cool league to play in, the Pioneer League, which was all over the, you know, parts of the country I probably will never go out to again. But being your first professional season, not knowing anything, coming from a small Division II school, and playing with the likes of, you know, guys going, went to Florida State, Stanford, great baseball schools with great facilities. It was a tiny town. I had to live with a host family after living on my own at college. That was an adjustment. It was tough. It was really tough. The baseball was the outlet. I mean, thank God, in professional baseball, really 24/7 of your time is spent with baseball people and baseball only. So there's not much time to get into anything else if you're smart about it and you want to make it to the big leagues. So ultimately, yeah, it was an adjustment for sure. But at the same time, having grown up in Philly, it really helped me catapult my career forward, because the grit and work ethic that kind of is instilled in you growing up in Philadelphia, it really, really helps you, especially in the minor league lifestyle.
So you're 3,000 miles away playing baseball, but not doing mm-hmm. what you're really used to. And for the most part, as a senior, you had been starting and they put you in the bullpen. How is the baseball adjustment to the from the time you realize, all right, I'm going to be a pitcher, and you're coming out of the pen?
The tough thing for me was just getting adjusted to not playing every day. That was really hard at first, especially on the rookie ball in the Pioneer League. It was a lot of younger guys playing out there, even though we had some college kids on the team. It was a lot of like 16, 17 year old Latin American kids. From Dominican and Venezuela, that, you know, really raw players, great athletes, but really raw. So I would see, you know, guys striking out of pitches. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, not knowing how things operate completely, just like, I didn't understand the big picture yet, that I'm sitting in the bullpen, not doing much. And I'm a 19th round draft pick. So my opportunities are going to be limited. So I knew in my mind, my analytical computer nerd mind, that I knew from day one that when I got an opportunity, I had to shine above and beyond in terms on paper, in terms of statistics, because otherwise I'll never get noticed. I'll never move up the chain. And that was a goal of mine, just to, when I got the opportunity, I had to be dominant. I mean, that was the only way. And thank God I had the season, my first season that I did, because I always say, like, if I had some really rough outings my first season, I don't know that lifestyle, how long I would have been able to deal with that, because my success kind of, again, gave me momentum to catapult me forward through my minor league career. And that first year was key, having that type of success I did.
And the success, 1.41 ERA, 24 hits allowed in 32 innings, you had 16 saves. Do you even know what you're doing as far as pitching, or are you still basically just throwing hard slider with two strikes and, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a combination of both. I mean, having pitched a lot outside of high school, I didn't pitch in high school, but I pitched a lot in, like, you know, rec teams. So I knew how to handle myself on a pitch mound, at least from a, like a 16-year-old mind. But ultimately, I always say my analytical thinking mind helped me, and being a hitter my whole life helped me a ton, because I know how hitters think, and I knew how I thought as a hitter. And I think part of it was a lot of throwing. I had a lot of movement on the sinker. I had a two-seam fastball that was, you know, had good late movement, so that helped me. Any mistakes I made my first couple seasons would get, you know, beat into the ground sometimes. They weren't getting hit out of the park. And then I just worked on my slider. I learned a lot, as is the case throughout every level and in the big league. You learn a lot from your fellow teammates more than anyone else. More than any coach, you just talk to each other. You're spending 24/7 with these guys 7 days a week, and you just talk about baseball all the time. And you just learn. Like, I got to learn from guys that played, you know, at some of the best schools in the country, and they had baseball IQ that was well above what I thought was possible. And so it kind of, just taking in that knowledge, kind of learning every day, every outing, just getting opportunity to close games. That was an adjustment. Playing in front of fans that, even like Great Falls, Montana, they would have 10,000-15,000 fans at every game. And I mean, you know, Philadelphia Textile, Jefferson University, we're lucky to get 30 fans at a game at Alumni Field. So I had never played in front of crowds like that. So I felt it exhilarating. It was great, but nerve-wracking too. So I think it was a combination of things, kind of some luck involved too, of course, and just knowing how to, just using the mental side of the game to kind of help me to my advantage, knowing how hitters think. That was the biggest thing that kind of got me through that. Otherwise, it was just a lot of throwing too.
So then the next year, did you skip the level? Because you went up to high A the next year, Dunedin, right?
Yeah, I actually skipped two. I skipped two levels, because I knew coming back to spring training, that's when I really started to focus on learning pitching. I mean, that off season, I was telling a friend of mine the other day, we were talking on a podcast. I still have the books on my bookshelf that I bought. I went out and bought, because the internet wasn't as vast with knowledge as it is today. I bought Nolan Ryan's Pitching Bible. I bought the ABCs of Pitching. I bought the complete guide, complete book of pitching. I bought all these pitching books, and I still have them. And I just tore through those, try to learn everything possible I could about just the mental aspects of pitching. I mean, mechanically, I threw the way I threw. And I always say mechanics, not every pitcher is cookie cutter. You can't do it all the same thing. I mean, there's some basics that you can kind of tune up, but for the most part, the mental side is going to carry you forward. And I knew that coming in to spring training the following year, my age, the way they stacked the minor leagues, I knew a lot more about the system and how it worked now, that I knew I was going to try to jump a level. If I could make the Dunedin team, because there was short season St. Catharines, that was another team. Then there was Hagerstown, Maryland, which is the low A long season, and then there's Dunedin, the high A. If I could get on that Dunedin team, because I started spring training with that, they always stack players on these minor league teams according to age, not necessarily skill. And I was put on the Dunedin team in spring training to practice with them. And I knew if I could do really well there, that maybe with my age, it would give me a shot to make that team, because I had such a good year prior to. And lucky enough, that's what happened. And then once I made Dunedin, I knew it could possibly get real, because I was now playing with guys my age, and I knew I was on track now. Like, I wasn't behind, and I wasn't going to get lost in the minor leagues. And that was key.
What was all those books you read, all that knowledge you took in, what was the biggest lesson you learned?
I guess the biggest thing was probably, had Nolan Ryan's, Pitching Bible was key, because I'd always pitched in. I've always preached pitching inside, and especially with it being a sinker baller to right-handed hitters. But his philosophy on pitching in, and which that's another story about how it exists in the game today, but just making hitters uncomfortable. And I knew from being a hitter that if a guy came in hard on me and moved my feet or hit me, you're uncomfortable. I don't care if the ball is coming at 70 miles an hour. If you're not feeling totally comfortable in there, you really can't get those arms extended and really drive the ball. And I knew if I could, you can have a persona. I always told kids I coach and stuff now today, you can have a persona on the mound of anything you want. And you could be feared on the mound, even though that might not be you as a person, but you can have this persona that, you know, if hitters fear you, if hitters fear coming inside, you're hard on them, they're going to be a little, you're going to have the advantage. And I think having that mental advantage over hitters is so key. And I think I built a reputation of that throughout the minor leagues. Once I was closing in the minor leagues, and I was not afraid to hit anyone, at least to come in hard, not hit anyone on purpose, but coming really hard on anyone. And I think having that thought in the hitter's mind that I might come in really hard on them, kind of really, that was the biggest thing I got from Nolan Ryan's book, was that he would always pitch inside really, really effectively.
And for a guy who didn't grow up pitching, you threw a ton of strikes. You didn't walk guys. Like, to what do you attribute that? Is that in the aggressive mindset of, I'm just, here it is, let's go to work and let's hit it?
Yeah, I kind of teach the same thing today when I work with guys. My whole philosophy, somebody said it to me when I was playing in the Toronto system. It might have been Paul Quantrill. Because when we were minor leaguers, some of the big league guys would come down and kind of like, and Paul Quantrill was always really good to me from I mean, when my Dunedin days. And he always said that he had one pitch, a sinker, and everything else was just show. And he said, if you get in trouble, he's like, just always throw the sinker right down the middle. He's like, what's the worst can happen? Even in the big leagues, he's like, hitters aren't going to rally off 7-8 hits in a row. Rarely ever. You're going to have good defense behind you at the professional level. They're going to make plays on ground balls. And that was my philosophy. Like, if I would throw strike one with a sinker, the worst thing they could do is hit a base hit. I mean, occasionally you would give up an occasional double or an extra base hit. But for the most part, the odds are in your favor. And if you remember that as a pitcher, because I think sometimes pitchers get a little too, you know, they give the hitter too much credit. And they think, okay, the hitter's going to, you know, get a hit if I throw the ball right down the middle. And the case is that, you know how it is. Nobody's ever hit, what, 400 in the big leagues? I mean, that's four hits every 10 at bat. So you figure the odds are in your favor. That's, again, back to the analytical side of the game, just understanding the odds. It's like playing blackjack and chess. And so that's what I kind of did. I kind of just attacked hitters right down the, really. And I had the advantage of movement on my sinker. So if it was really, you know, belt high, it would have some movement. So it was hard to barrel up my fastball when I was at my prime. So that helped too. So I had some luck involved there. But for the most part, it was, you know, let them hit it, especially at the professional level. They want to swing the bat. They don't want to walk. And that was key. I mean, that was really key. Just try not to walk anybody. And that's what, if you look at Paul Quantrill's career, he made a living on not walking anyone. And that was some great advice.
So you had the year at Dunedin. The next year, you split double and triple A. So 3 years into your professional career, I think you have 70 saves and a sub-2 ERA. So we come to 2001. Are you looking at 2001? I'm ready, and this is my time. If I'm going to break through into the big leagues, this is it.
It's still, I mean, when you're in the minor leagues, at least, and it's still so far-fetched. I mean, the chances of making it to the big leagues, even once you're in the minor leagues, is so, so, so slim that it just seems like a far-fetched dream. So you just keep working, working, working. But at the same time, once you get a double A, and that's when you start to realize, if you have success at double A, that's when you start to realize, like, okay, they're looking now. Now they're looking at, okay, who's having success? Who can help the big league team? And for me, at double A, I was having a lot of success, and then I started to have some bad luck right towards before I got called up to AAA, actually. And I think that's part of the reason I got called up, because I was doing so well. And then all of a sudden there was, you know, I was blowing saves on, like, you know, blooper hits. Like, it was just like some bad luck and some bad pitching. And I was just like, I was hitting some adversity. And then they decided to move me to AAA, which was interesting at the time, because I was shocked that I was getting promoted after a couple bad outings. But I got promoted to AAA, and what happened to me, talk about lightning striking and striking the bottle. I mean, Matt DeWitt was closing in AAA, and he had a line drive. My second game, third game there, he had a line drive hit back on him and broke his leg, and he had to be put on the disabled list. So they decided to put me in a closer role at AAA, which would have never happened if Matt didn't break his leg. So ultimately, I had a chance to close games, which I was comfortable doing. And even though they were much, you know, a higher level of hitters, I just continued to do what I was doing in double A, just the same kind of, you know, hard sinkers in, hard sinkers away, sliders down in, sliders away. And it worked, because hitters, they didn't know me. They didn't know what I had. And ultimately, I got a lot of saves in a short amount of time. So on paper, it was eye-popping. So that's when, you know, the big league team started to notice. And that fall, I played in the Arizona Fall League, and then was put on the 40-man roster. and ultimately had a chance to make the team the next spring.
Time for a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Bob File coming up right after this.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Hey everybody, it's Cherry Gregg here. You may know me around town as KYW News Radio's community affairs reporter, but every week I produce and host Flashpoint, a podcast where we highlight the hot topics in Philadelphia, local newsmakers and change makers burning things up in our region. From gerrymandering to gender equality and policing in schools, we'll walk you through the flames on Flashpoint. It's available wherever you downloaded this podcast that you're listening to now. So subscribe. Thanks so much.
And we are back on One-on-One. Our guest this week, former Father Judge and Jefferson University baseball star, Bob File.
You made the Blue Jays out of spring training. Was there a conversation you made it, or was it just, nobody's come to talk to me, I still have a locker, and they're giving me the time to get on the plane?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I mean, the team at the time, and it's funny, I keep in touch with some of those guys from that 2001 team, because Blue Jays were pretty competitive for the pennant the years leading up to 2001, especially in 2000. They were in it late, and they just got a new manager, Buck Martinez. Jim Fregosi was a manager prior, and ultimately, in spring training, Buck Martinez really had a liking to me, which was good, because I knew something was up when they released John Praskator, who was a pretty stable reliever in the big leagues for a lot of years and had a pretty good spring, and I was shocked they released him and to make a spot for me. And nobody really said anything. I found out from my minor league, one of my minor league coaches who coached me in A-ball and double-A, Rocket Wheeler. He had come up and told me that I was making the team, and it was a good thing. And of course Buck told me and things like that, but it's kind of like, okay, this is what's happening, this is the business. And it's not like, you know, no fireworks or anything. You're making the team and act professional. And the team, like I said, was a veteran team. I mean, you had like Quantrill, Plesac, Jeff Fry, Mondesi, Tony Fernandez on that team. I mean, these guys have been around forever. So talk about coming as a rookie. I was the only rookie on the team in the beginning of the year. So, I mean, talk about getting hazed. It was an interesting season, to say the least.
And you were on the roster, but you didn't. You were there for a couple weeks before you pitched. Yeah. Am I correct?
Yeah. It was kind of a little frustrating. At first, it was just, you know, it was like the spotlight. I was just amazed at, you know, the big league. It's so night and day from even AAA that I was just in amazement. At least back then it was. I was just amazed at the stadium. I was just amazed at everything. But then ultimately, after a week or two, I started to get a little bit frustrated in my mind, like saying, okay, I'm seeing what's out there. I know I'm capable of competing. And I had a good spring training against a lot of these same players. So why aren't I getting an opportunity to pitch? And I wound up having a conversation with Buck Martinez, and I just asked him, I said, can you just tell me? And he's like, listen, he's like, your first outing in the big league, you don't know what it's like. He's like, I know what it's like, and I'm going to put you in a position where you don't fall flat on your face. He's like, I just want to let you know that. He's like, you might get frustrated for now, but I'm telling you, I'm setting you up for the rest of your career. And I was like, okay, this guy's been in baseball for what, 30, 40 years, forever. I'm like, he knows what he's talking about. I'll take his word for it. And ultimately, my first outing, he gave me that perfect opportunity, which was key.
And that debut came April 14th, 2001. It's in Toronto, I think, against the Royals. And you actually come into a game in the ninth inning, and you guys are down three. So it's a low-leverage situation.
beyond low leverage. I mean, it was two outs, nobody on base, and we're down three. And I was facing the, I forget where he was in the last nine hole hitter, maybe, or Hector Ortiz, the catcher. He was, might have been in the nine hole. So you couldn't pick a less, at home in Toronto. So it's a less of a pressure situation, which, hey, you know, I was getting an opportunity to pitch. So it's funny, I get out there and I'm fine. And I always explain the story, like, yeah, I got on the mound and the strangest thing happened. I got really, really nervous. And it was just, it's hard to put into words how nervous I got. And I never got nervous like that before in any other outing. And I thought to myself, I said, Buck, you were so right about this. I was like, because this is going to be hard to pitch. And I remember being like, okay, just muscle memory, take over. And Darren Fletcher was catching. He's been around forever. I'm like, I'll just, whatever he puts down, I'm going to throw. And I remember I threw a couple sinkers and I got ahead of the count. And then I wound up breaking his bat on a ground ball to short. And I remember sticking the ground ball went to short. I'm like, okay, Alex Gonzalez is a shortstop. He made the play so easy and smooth. It was like, no problem. And I'm like, okay, I got out of the inning. And I'm like, phew. And then I come to the dugout and, you know, it's typical, you know, get the ball and everything like that. It was a great thing. It was just low pressure situation. And to my surprise, talk about a great memory. We came back again to Roberto Hernandez throwing 100 miles an hour. We came back and scored four runs in the bottom of the ninth, and I got the win after throwing five pitches.
When did you realize you got the win? Like, was that something you're in the clubhouse locker room? And
yeah, no, I was. I stayed in the dugout because I was just like, I was still kind of like, kind of just dazed. And I remember being in the dugout and we came back and the first person came over to me, Jose Cruz Jr. came over to me. He's like, you know, you got the win, right? And he's like, you gotta be kidding me. And then I think Jeff Fry did the same thing. And Jeff Fry, I think he grabbed the shaving cream pie and just smashed it in my face when I was doing an interview after the game. And it was a hell of an experience. Like, I really didn't put together that I got the win. And it took me a little bit to kind of comprehend that the chances, I mean, come on, one hitter, five pitches, and I get a major league win on my first outing. It's just like, you know, it doesn't get any better than that.
And then your second outing, almost a week later, you're pitching against a pretty good Yankees team. And am I correct? You basically were the last man standing in the bullpen because it was like a 17 inning game and you just kind of got the ball and had to go?
Yeah, I was the last guy, of course, after just having one outing with one hitter. Of course, we're facing the Yankees, who I always say a couple years prior, we're watching in my dorm room in Philly, Texas. I were watching win like World Series at the World Series. And I'm looking at these guys and now I'm getting a chance to get in a game in the, I believe it was the 13th inning. And I remember warming up being like, okay, who am I facing? And I'm facing like, I don't know who were the righties at the time, but I've faced a couple of righties, which I was comfortable with. But I remember being like, you got to be kidding me with this lineup. I'm like, I'm on the mound facing Knobloch, Jeter, Posada, Justice, Scott Brosius. I mean, I'm thinking on the mound. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This is ridiculous. I'm like, in the extra innings and in such a pressure-packed situation after everybody's arms are, I mean, we're depleted. And ultimately, I pitched four innings, which was my longest outing since college, which was crazy. It was just hell of a memory, that's for sure.
And I mean, you were going the second time through that lineup. I mean, what's, mm-hmm. you know, what's that like? Like you're kind of scouting on the run. Like you said, these are guys you watched in your dorm room and you know, the second time you're getting through to them. What was that like?
Yeah, that was the thing. It was, it's funny because the first time through I was facing all these power lefties and these great lefty hitters like Paul O'Neill, Justice, Posada. I mean, all these lefties that, you know, I was a sinker baller with a pretty decent slider to right-handed hitters, but these lefties, I threw some occasional backdoor breaking balls. So I told Darren Fletcher in between innings, like, listen, start calling backdoor breaking balls on the outer half, like call them out there and I'll throw it out there. And this way we can kind of set up some inside fastballs to some of these lefties. Cause otherwise, you know, my repertoire is going to be sinker away and they might ground it out, but they might also hit lasers to the other side. I mean, Paul O'Neill's a legend. I'm like, I'm talking about like giving the hitters too much credit. I'm like giving them all the credit in this situation. So I'm sitting in the dugout talking to Fletcher, and Fletcher's, you know, ultimate professional. He's just like, listen, calm down, relax. He's like, you'll dominate these guys. And I remember striking out Paul O'Neill on a backdoor breaking ball that was borderline, and looking, and he, in Paul O'Neill fashion, is throwing stuff, throwing the cooler. I mean, I'm just like on the mound in the back of my head. I'm like, this is awesome. He's Paul O'Neill. And little did I know, I would come through that lineup a second time, tie game in the 17th inning. And I had Chuck Knoblauch, 0-2, with two outs, nobody on. And I winded up, I remember my calf started cramping up a little bit. I was like, oh boy, I haven't pitched this long in so long. So I threw four straight balls and I walked them. And Knoblauch wound up stealing second. Peter hit a base hit. And it was first and third with two outs. And who was up? Paul O'Neill. And I'm like, this is the second time I'm facing him. He ain't going to fall for the backdoor breaking ball again. And, of course, I threw a sinker away, and he just went with it the other way like a professional hitter does. And instead of trying to pull it, he went with it, single through the left side, and they scored a run. And ultimately wound up getting a loss in the 4-17-inning heartbreak. But, man, what an experience. What a memory. I mean, looking back on it today.
But, I mean, even though you got the loss, I would imagine that performance in that situation, like Buck Martinez already liked you, but that really, I would think, had to turn heads that, hey, this kid can handle it. He's a part of the bullpen. He's not a rookie. He's not a guy we're protecting. Yeah. He's a guy, right?
Yeah, it was key. I mean, Buck even said to me after the game, he talked to me, he's like, don't worry about the loss. He's like, you prove yourself in more ways than I possibly thought you possibly could. So, I mean, it literally cemented my spot in the bullpen for that year. I mean, it really did. And again, back to my momentum, having that momentum in anything you do. It's like if you have success and you can build off that success and build momentum and just go with that, it's like anything else. I mean, you can really, you know, it can propel your confidence forward tremendously. And that's kind of what it did, especially through the first half of the season. Into the second half, it really helped me think that I could belong. Because having faced those, I mean, it was the top team in the league, in my opinion. And having been able to have success against those guys in those innings I pitched, it showed me that, okay, at least I can hang with these guys. And you know, it's I'm not just, you know, flash in the pan like I thought I might be.
And you have a ton of success that season. You settle in. And I would guess one of the other big highlights of that season is mid-July when the Blue Jays come to the Vet and play the Phillies, no?
Of course. I mean, that's the highlight of my professional career, to be quite honest, looking back on it. Especially, it was the first series after the All-Star break, so I was talking about this a few months ago. I was able to stay at home with my family during the All-Star break in Philly, and my dad was able to drive me down to the Vet to go to games, to go to work. I mean, we used to go to tons of games together, and Mally dropped me off at the visiting clubhouse, and you know, as a player, which was, you know, crazy at the time. I mean, it really is. It's still to this day is crazy. And having been able to pitch at the Vet, I got into two of the three games. It was just a great experience. Even though I gave up my first major league home run at the Vet, which is, you know, again, what are the chances, right?
Yeah, that was the first night you threw a shutout inning or two-thirds of a shutout inning. Then the next night, was it Scott Rowland that got you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Scott Rowland. Oh, like it was yesterday. I'll never forget it. I mean, I was facing Scott Rowland. I had just come off a series in Montreal before the All-Star break where I always say, like, the hitter started to make the adjustment on my pitches a little bit. I noticed it in Montreal where hitters were laying off a couple of my sliders. They were taking my sinker. They were just looking at the video and saying, okay, this is what this guy has. Be aware. Where I, up to that point, I was kind of getting away with pitches because hitters didn't know me. And that's the one thing in the big leagues. You had to make the adjustment. And that can be challenging for guys. And I remember being in Philly, even at two-thirds the night before, I had okay stuff. But I remember being like, I'm just not on my A game. I have to, you know, tighten some things up. And I was facing Rowland the next night with guys on base. And I remember going 3-2 on Rowland. And I always say Rowland has that swing, kind of like Derek Jeter has, that short, tight swing, which a sinker baller like me usually has trouble with because they can always get the barrel to the ball somehow. And I knew Rowland had that type of swing, and I knew he'd be a challenge for me to pitch to. And 3-2, we decided – I kept fouling pitches off, and we decided, okay, let's just pop – we had first base open, I think, and he said – Alberto Castillo called a changeup, which I rarely threw. I threw a handful all year. And I said, okay, I'll throw a changeup. Maybe I'll get him off guard. Otherwise, maybe I'll get him to bounce out or something like that, or just walk him. So I threw a changeup, and he was out on his front foot, and he crushed it. And I'm looking, I'm watching this ball go, and I mean, knowing the dimensions of the Vet, knowing the Vet, like my whole life, it hits the foul ball. And I'm like, that hit the foul? And it was a home run. And I was just like, I was a little in shock. I was pissed. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And that was my first home run I gave up all year. And it's off the foul pole, off of one foot, a changeup, my worst pitch. And so, yeah, So I remember it like it was yesterday, literally yesterday. I can picture it in my mind.
And did you get run that game?
Did I get what?
Did you get thrown out of that game?
I sure did. Well, so the next hitter, I remember like yesterday, Travis Lee came to bat. And, you know, I know a lot about the Phillies, just being a Phillies fan my whole life. I always followed the Phillies even when I was playing still. And Travis Lee, like I said earlier about pitching inside, I threw a first pitch slider and he took a swing on it so hard and ripped it down the line and almost hit off the wall and it was foul. I remember thinking to myself, okay, go back to my learning, go back to how I pitch, take a step back and think for a second. I said, he's getting way too comfortable in this box right now because he just saw this home run and he just took a swing like that on my slider. I said, I can't have that. That's how I pitch. So Alberto Castillo knew me up to that point. He caught me a lot during the first half of the season, and he had called a fastball inside. And for me, I wanted to make sure that I had Travis move his feet. So you don't try to hit a guy in that situation, but I ultimately wanted him to move off the plate to know, like, okay, you're not going to take a swing like that again. Because then I was going to come back with a sinker away, and he would hopefully just get a ground ball. So I threw inside pretty hard. I was pretty fired up, and I wound up hitting him pretty good. Even though it wasn't intentional, I didn't realize that both teams had already had warnings against us because Delgado had gotten hit a couple of times. And I didn't even think of that. I was like, not even thinking of that. And I got tossed as soon as I hit him and I was on the mound. I remember thinking, I mean, I still don't have the video of this. I'm trying to get a copy of this video because I want to see it again. Cause I remember thinking to myself, hey, what's going on? I'm thrown out of the game. I don't even know what to do. Like, I didn't know what to do. I'd never been thrown out of the game before. And the bench is almost cleared, and I was still like, I just hit the guy. Why am I getting tossed? And it was because after a home run, but people don't realize it was the second pitch of the at-bat. It wasn't the first pitch yet. So I get tossed, and I go sit in the dugout, and I'm sitting there, and sitting next to Jose Cruz Jr., he's kind of like looking at me like, are you kidding me right now? And he's like, you have to go back in the clubhouse. You can't stay in the dugout. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I never got tossed it before. I had no idea what to do. And I'm kind of like, I had like a grin on my face. I remember getting booed off the field in Philadelphia. Like, the boos were so loud. I'm like, I look back on this. I remember thinking at the time, like, this is awesome. Because I remember, this is Philly. I'm one of these fans. Like, I would be doing the same thing. It was so loud in the stands. The boos were so loud. And I just remember going back up to the clubhouse being like, you got to be kidding me. What are the chances that I give up my first major league home run in Philly and I get thrown out of my first game of my life in Philadelphia?
So
it's crazy.
And I'm guessing you had a couple hundred people in the stands watching you?
At least. I mean, all the guys gave me all their tickets. Each guy would get 6 tickets apiece. I mean, I must have left hundreds of tickets every night. I mean, hundreds. College, high school, friends, family. I mean, that's what I always said. I'm like, if there was a bench clearing brawl, I look back at this. I'm like, you're telling me my dad's going to sit behind a plate and let me get pummeled on the mound by people? I'm like, it would have been mayhem. Like, all my college friends, they would have just sat there. There's no way. There's just no way. I look back at it, I'm like, it would have been complete mayhem. I'm glad things didn't get crazy. But yeah, I mean, the longer I'm away from it, it's been almost 20 years now. I mean, it's which is crazy to me. I can remember vividly each moment of those games. So it's just great memories now.
So you have a phenomenal rookie season, one of the best rookies in baseball. I think he ended up making 60 appearances. Then injuries start to take a toll, and am I correct, it was not like a chronic problem. It was all you seemed to struggle with different things at different times.
Well, I mean, it all stemmed from one injury. The following spring I got hurt in spring training. I hurt my rib cage. I tore a rib cage muscle, and part of it, I mean, I again, being the overanalyzer and analyzing everything, I'm looking back on it and understanding, having coached pitching, understanding in the moment I didn't realize what was going on, but looking back on it, I mean, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now, right? I tore a ribcage muscle, but I started throwing a split finger or a forkball, split finger fastball, whatever you want to call it. I started throwing that, so I started changing some things, not realizing mechanically. I didn't strike out a whole lot of hitters at the major league level. I was getting a lot of contact, and I always wanted to get better, so I wanted like a put-away pitch. So that's, and my changeup wasn't it. So somebody had taught me a little bit of a split finger, and I was playing around with that, and it was pretty good. But what I didn't realize, it was evolving my delivery into something it shouldn't have been. And I was doing different things with my body, and ultimately I tore a ribcage muscle. At the time, I didn't know it was because of that. But then I tried to pitch through that. I came back too early. The Philadelphia person in me, coming back way too early, not being naive about how the game, and then I wind up, the chronic shoulder injury crept up on me because I kind of kept pitching through this, not knowing what was causing it. And ultimately, I wound up tearing my labrum and having a labrum tear in my shoulder, all stemmed from probably coming back to it early from that rib cave injury. And then kind of things snowballed from there a little bit. And I kind of came back from it when I probably should have had surgery sooner. I came back a little too soon, especially in the big leagues, for a couple appearances that year. And then ultimately had the surgery in 2002, that winter. Probably waited too long. And then 2003, I was still in the big league roster. 2003, so I got a year of service time, but ultimately I was mostly doing rehab starts and rehab appearances and kind of coming back from that, doing pretty well, but I had to like basically reinvent myself as a pitcher because I mean the fastball was nowhere near 93 to 94 miles an hour like it used to be. It was more 90-91 with some late movement, but not as good as it was before. So I kind of had to rely on those mental aspects of the game and try to reinvent myself as a pitcher if I ever wanted to pitch in big leagues again.
You did get back in 2004, and then the Blue Jays let you go. You got a shot with the Cardinals in spring training. Where were you health wise? And is that when you hurt your back?
Yeah. I pitched well enough to get back to the Blue Jays in 2004. I got the Blue Jays comeback player of the year that year from the local sports writers, which was kind of cool considering I was nowhere near the pitcher I used to be. And I knew that I was a Super 2, I was arbitration eligible, and I knew with my ERA, and they could call up a rookie. Why would they pay me when they knew my stuff was, you know, average at the major league level at best? So I knew that they were going to release me, and they released me. And when they did, I had a lot of teams call, which was kind of cool. I ultimately came down to Tampa Bay or the St. Louis Cardinals for me as a minor league free agent. The reason I signed up the Cardinals was, looking at the type of pitcher I was, I looked at the AL East versus the NL Central and the types of hitters versus that I would be facing. And I knew that my pitching style being a ground ball, strictly a ground ball pitcher now, versus the AL East with those boppers, they had those lineups throughout the, you know, early 2000s that were stacked between Boston and you know, Tampa Bay, Toronto even, and the Yankees. I figured in the AL Central is more of a, you know, hit and run type, steal bases type of hitters where I might have more success against the National League. And in the National League game, you have the pitcher hitting. So I just thought my game might lend itself to that. And plus, the Cardinals had a notorious reputation of giving guys a chance that no matter who you were. I mean, they were notorious. I mean, La Russa was notorious for that. And they were a World Series caliber team. So they were top notch. So I figured, and their spring training was in Florida where I was familiar. There was a lot of things that came into play, but ultimately I signed as a free agent with St. Louis and made it through spring training to the end. And it was me, Mike Jarvis, I think it was, or Kevin Jarvis and Bill Pulse for the last position in the bullpen. And again, I wasn't the pitcher I was. I knew it would be a struggle to stay in the big leagues with what I had. I just knew it. And I wanted to stay in the big leagues. I didn't want to pitch in the minor leagues and kind of just make zero money and just kind of grind it out. I just knew physically what you need to pitch in the big leagues long term, and I just didn't know if I had that. And ultimately, I herniated a disc 2 days before spring training broke. Just lifting light weights, nothing crazy. Just freak incident. That was underlying issue was there. It just happened then, and ultimately, I was optioned to Memphis, their AAA affiliate, where I had asked for my release because they were not going to pay me my minor league salary. Which they can do to minor league players that people might not know. They cannot pay you at all because you're not in a union and you're not under contract that's binding. So ultimately, they decided not to pay me. And I just said, you know, instead of staying in Memphis, doing my rehab there, you know, I didn't know when I would pitch again. I said, you know, let's ask for my release. I'll do my rehab and my therapy at home in Philly, and I'll see where I'm at after that.
Did you get any calls past that, or was that the last?
I had
connection?
A couple calls. My agent was really working hard. I mean, he wanted me to play again because he looked at my last outing officially was against Baltimore in the big leagues. And he said, you know, he said, you know, you have to give it some more of a chance. And ultimately I rehabbed my back in Philly locally. I played a few games in the Pendel local men's league just to kind of see physically where I was for a friend of mine. Mike Whitaker for the Loma baseball team, the great Loma baseball team in the Pendel League. Locally, a lot of folks know what that league is. And I knew I was interviewing for some jobs in the pharmaceutical space. And I just said, if I get a job opportunity, I'll take it and I'll decide where I'm at. And I just knew I got a job with AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, and I took that job, and I was 3 months out of spring training, and I took the job. It was a great opportunity to start my next career, and I just knew pitching in the men's league that, yeah, this I don't have the stuff to get big league hitters out. I just don't have it, and I made a little bit of money playing in the big leagues, and I didn't want to, you know, blow that all away on playing paying rent in the minor leagues, and I figured it's time to try to move on.
Did you ever consider trying to reinvent yourself as a hitter, given how good you were at it in college and what now kind of what you knew about how the sausage was made in pro baseball?
Yeah, no. I mean, Ben McClure, the scout, made a good point when he was signing. He said, listen, he's like, I like you as a hitter. He's like, I think your tools and your makeup will get you as far as double A as a hitter. And having played at those levels, he was spot on, in my opinion. Like, to play every day at the double A level as a hitter, I compared my skill set to what I faced and the guys I was up against, like the guys I played with, like Mike Young, Cesar Torres. Like, these guys were, I mean, big league, long time big league players. And I mean, I'm not even close to the hitter those guys were. I mean, the differences are so drastic, even though maybe I'm not giving myself enough credit as well. But at the same time, I just know my whole goal was to play the big league level for a long period of time. If you get there, the hardest part, people say it all the time, is staying there. The hardest part's getting there, then the hardest part's staying there. And that's definitely the case. Like, I always say, a close friend of mine, Jeff Fry, played almost 10 years in the big leagues. And I'm like, to play 10 years in the big leagues is just amazing to me. Like, I played a couple of years, and it was so hard to stay healthy, so hard to go through that grind as a pitcher, a bullpen pitcher at that, to be an everyday hitter, everyday position player, and knowing what it takes. Yeah, no chance. Plus, I had to take BP with St. Louis for the first time in 7 years. And I had to learn how to bunt with the greats, like Jose Oquendo taught me how to bunt, which was a great, I remember stepping in the cage for the first time in 7 years because of Toronto, we never took batting practice. And I remember trying to bunt against I'm like, oh, I used to hit, I can bunt easily. And I remember like the first 10 pitches blew past me and I didn't even hit it with the bat. I was like, what is going, I couldn't believe it. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. So I was like, yeah, my hitting days are way over. And, so ultimately, yeah, I probably could practice, become a serviceable hitter in the Pendel League, but ultimately, from doing a Rick Ankiel, who I play with, that's just amazing that a guy can go from pitching to being a hitter in the big leagues. That's just unheard of. The amount of skill and talent level is just, I mean, you're talking off the chart stuff.
So you're done baseball, you have a job, it's in the area you studied, you're able to make a pretty smooth transition, but how, at those first few years, are you comfortable with the decision? Is there still an itch? Are you, or is there any anger for, you know, that you got cut short for injury, stuff like that? Or how long did it take for you before you were completely at peace with your baseball career?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while. I mean, ultimately, when I first started working, it was tough. It was tough to watch any Major League Baseball, that was for sure. I mean, it was hard at first because a lot of the guys I played with and against were still playing. And just making the transition to, you know, your typical, so to say, 9-to-5 type corporate atmosphere, it was just different. I mean, the one thing that really helped me, though, was just the grind and the work ethic of the everyday baseball life. I mean, you know, people look at it from a big league perspective, like, yeah, real tough staying in 5-star hotels and everything like that. But the minor leagues, like, and not having weekends off ever and not having any downtime. I mean, I really dove into my work like I did with baseball. So it was 24/7 for me. So I had a lot of success early on with my working career, just because of work ethic alone and just really trying to learn everything possible I could and kind of really digging into everything. So the first couple of years were tough from a baseball perspective, but I think ultimately I kind of got back into baseball. I went back for my master's degree at LaSalle University and probably about 7-8 years ago. And then I coached a little bit there and kind of turned the page a little bit. And a lot of the players I played against in the big leagues were out of the game coaching now or doing whatever. So it was easier to get back into watching. And ultimately, the longer out on that, almost 20 years, I mean, this is my first big league season, but the longer away from the game in that aspect, the professional game, makes me appreciate, like, the college game, for example. I love the college baseball game. So, So yeah, it was challenging at first, but I'm at peace with it. I've had a pretty successful corporate life now, which is like my next endeavor. So that's been my focus for the past 15, 20 years.
Bob File, thanks so much for being our guest this week.
Thanks, Matt. Always a pleasure.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One on One. Want to thank Bob File for being our guest this week. If you like the podcast, want to help us out, and you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at One on One Pod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and we will have another conversation with someone you should know more about next week.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.